You made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to share rules, norms, and respect, we're not even obligated to consider your opinion any longer because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan the Worshipman Dionysus Man, sipping on science today. I'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a good time. We hope you do too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We'll be talking about the surprising color interior designers don't want you to know about. And as always, I'm joined by some fine and fascinating guests in the lounge today. I'm joined by Amber, my sister who loves woo-woo and thinks she's always right too. Amber, how are you doing this wonderful Mother's Day? Happy Mother's Day.
Aw, thank you. I'm doing rather well today. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, doing good. Especially now that we're here in the lounge hanging out, my favorite place to be. We got a really fun and informative show for everyone today. Brought to us by the Soylent Corporation. Pick a color, any color.
Green. I pick green.
Soylent Green. Made out of people. We're going to take a quick look back at the smallpox vaccine, first tested May 14th, 1796.
Oh, wow.
We've got some hot science news about shape-shifting robots and robotic insects. Big robot-heavy episode today.
Nice.
When we get to snake oil, the professor's going to pop in. He and I had a very nice conversation about how super rich people pay no taxes. We actually walk through the process and educate people on that chicanery. We're going to play a rousing rendition of Fact Checking Time. And of course, as always, we'll wrap things up with a feel good story. We do encourage everyone to reach out to us. You can send us an email at halfcocktails@gmail.com. Maybe you want to send us a voice message or text message. You can do that to 443-499-8253. Or you can drop a comment over on one of our socials, so on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I think I actually started a Facebook Reels thing because I don't do Twitter. Head over there. Let us know how we're doing, what you think. Maybe you got some questions about one of the stories. It doesn't matter. We just love it when you reach out.
Remind Dan that I'm always right. He said it last week. So reach out. Remind him. Don't let him forget.
I should throw that on the soundboard. All right. Let's hop in that time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in a time machine.
Okay, smallpox. What the hell is it? Nobody's had it for years. No, nobody that I know. I'm sure it's coming back.
Could it come back? That's what we need to know.
Absolutely, it could come back. So this is like, smallpox is one of the most feared diseases throughout human history.
Very deadly.
It's super high mortality. It disfigures the survivors. We can trace smallpox back to ancient Egypt, ancient India, ancient China. Thousands of years ago, we can find evidence of corpses where it's like they died of smallpox. They were disfigured by smallpox.
Wow.
We find it in their literature and writings. It's everywhere, right? This was human enemy number one for a long time. And of course, everybody all over the world tried to control smallpox. They came across a thing that's called variolation. It originated independently in different parts of Asia. In India and China, written records describe the process of introducing material from someone's smallpox sores, and then they would introduce that pus to someone who didn't have smallpox.
Wow.
So it was, people noticed that survivors of smallpox didn't get it again. Like, so it was pretty evident that once someone had smallpox and lived through it, like, oh, they were just exposed to that person and they didn't get it. So the idea was, if we just expose you to a little bit, then you can get a small amount, survive, and be immune to it. So that's that's pretty much where humanity was for a long time.
What's the mechanism of a vaccine?
It is the absolute rudimentary mechanism, right?
It was really interesting, though, that they came up with it so long ago. Like, you wouldn't think that in the 1700s they'd be coming up with vaccines. I wouldn't, anyway.
It's the old argument people try to use against evolution. What good is half a wing, right? And it's like, well, half a wing's way better than no wings because you can fall a lot more slowly. You can't fly. But you fall. So this is, it's like, oh, well, what good is variolation? It's not a vaccine. Well, it's not, but it's better than nothing.
Right.
This is that very first step. This is the very bud of the wing that is eventually going to form slowly over time and discovery. It reached the, variolation reached the Ottoman Empire, where it became the standard well-established practice by the 17th century. So, it made it to Europe in the early 18th century, the early 1700s. This lady, her name was Lady Mary Wortley Montague, not of the Shakespearean Montagues, as far as I know.
I was going to say Montague.
She was the wife of the British ambassador to Turkey, and she witnessed this variolation practice in Constantinople. So she actually saw it work and had it done to her own kids.
Oh, wow.
To vaccinate them, right? The development of this vaccine involved a bold, scientific-minded lady vaccinating her kids. If that isn't some sort of weird mirror of the beginning and the end of vaccines.
Girls rule the world. We really do.
Right? Her advocacy, Lady Montague, it just played this huge role in Britain adopting variolation, right? Despite the people at the time resisting and being really skeptical, like the medical professionals of Britain of the day, were like, this is quackery.
Right.
So it started to gain acceptance, and they were using it to try and control smallpox outbreaks, especially in the upper class. But, you know, it was rudimentary and crude, and it often resulted in severe disease, and it could even start an outbreak. Like, let's say you put some of this pus on a kid with a weak immune system, it just takes off. Boom, he's just got full-blown smallpox and spreading it to everybody.
Right, right. A lot of trial and error.
So people, like, this was not the be-all. People knew we need better, right?
Right.
We need to do better. And the guy that did better is named Edward Jenner. But I do want to take a little detour and talk about this guy named Johnny Notion in Scotland. Okay. He did not make the vaccine that Edward Jenner did, right? Johnny Notion was a Scottish doctor who came up with his own smallpox inoculation technique. So this is a vaccine. When I go through what he did, our understanding is like he made his own vaccine,
right?
But this was not the one that became commercialized and took off. But this was kind of at the same time. This guy was born 1730, died 1803. The smallpox vaccine was done in 1796. So he died maybe 10 years after the vaccine came out, but he treated people in Scotland using his technique. And the accounts of the day say he didn't lose a single patient.
Oh, wow. That's pretty significant. What was the difference then?
So what Johnny Notions did was he collected smallpox pus, dried it out using peat smoke, which he believed weakened the virus. And then he would bury it in the ground with camphor to keep it from decomposing.
Wow.
And oral history, we don't have documents of this, right? We got oral history of this. And it says that he spread it out between glass sheets before he buried it. And he would keep it for 7 to 8 years underground, sitting in the camphor.
Oh, wow.
Then he would take a knife he designed himself, and he would make an intradermal cut, which means he's cutting into the skin, but not enough to bleed.
Right.
And then insert a small amount of this weakened smallpox pus.
Right.
And then cover it up with their own skin. He would tape it over their own skin and use cabbage leaf plaster to seal over the skin he had taken out.
That's fascinating.
Right. And it was, so it's been mentioned that, the people in the area like swore by this guy. Like he was celebrated as like the go-to guy in Shetland.
So was the big difference that he, you know, like had it sit and incubate for 7 years in the ground? Like was that the major difference in their approaches?
So what he was doing was taking the actual smallpox virus and weakening it.
Right.
And then introducing the weak version so people's immune systems could just beat it up and do great. Similar to some of the flu vaccines okay. we do.
So the others weren't weakening it. They were just using little bits of it. Is that right?
So the vaccine we know, made famous by Edward Jenner, who gets all the credit. I just thought was an interesting aside when I was doing the research for this, because I'd never heard of that. And was like, wow, they had somebody at the same time do the same thing, but didn't take off.
Right. Didn't have the same reach.
Jenner was this guy from Gloucester, England. He knew about smallpox from an early age. He was raised in a rural country setting, and he was exposed to a lot of the folklore and observations from you know, the countryside about smallpox. Right. Milkmaids who had he came across stories that milkmaids who got cowpox never got smallpox. So he, as a country doctor, would go around and people would tell him these stories and then be like, oh yeah, I got cowpox, I'll never get smallpox. So he started looking into that connection between those two immunities. And but he needed to make some experiments first before he could put it together. So he, in 1796, along with a milkmaid named Sarah Nelms, who had cowpox, he scooped up some pus from her lesions. It's a great image. She had it all, you know, like all over her hands and stuff. And he processed that. For his experiment, he got this 8-year-old named James Phipps, who was the son of his gardener, healthy, no previous history of either disease.
Okay.
So he took the stuff from Sarah Nelms' hand and put two cuts on this kid's arm and wiped the pus onto him. Gave him cowpox, right?
As a mom, I'm sitting here going, that's a pretty huge risk to take with my child.
So what we're going to do is we're going to get your kid sick with cowpox. Then, once he's better, we're going to try and give him smallpox. Are you in?
No, I am not.
It sounds crazy when you put it like that, right?
Yeah, just a bit.
Fortunately, little James only developed a mild fever and some discomfort, but those symptoms soon subsided. He didn't get a bad illness. In the following weeks, the infection stayed mild and localized, never even became like the milkmaid had, with pus on her hands and whatnot.
Right.
But the scary thing was about 6 weeks later. Now they didn't, they just tossed him in a room of smallpox patients. No, they didn't. That'd be awful. they did some variolation, right? Which was known, okay. which could completely infect you. But so what they did was they variolated him, took, you know, the tiny amount, still super risky.
Yeah.
But he didn't get any symptoms.
Wow.
And it became the first documented case where a deliberate introduction of a disease provided immunity against another disease. So, of course, Jenner Jenner follows it up and replicates it and moved on to his own kids.
Well, yeah, use the gardener's kid first, just in case it doesn't work.
Right?
Yeah. Well, classes there.
He published in 1798 a paper called An Inquiry into the Causes and Effects of the Variolae Vaccinae, where he detailed all these experiments and findings.
That's pretty incredible. I didn't realize vaccines went back that far.
1798 was the first published paper. 1796 was the experiment that proved it. Although a little earlier, like I just said, Johnny Notions, we'll have the episode.
Yeah.
We'll have, in the episode description, we'll have a link to both their wiki pages.
I guess it's, you know, all in who you know. He just didn't know Notions just didn't know the right people to get his name on there first.
Well, I don't think Johnny Notions ever published a paper. They just have oral histories. Mm. So he wasn't, okay. He didn't think big enough, right?
He was just helping his community.
He did it for his community. He never thought like, hey, wait, maybe I should start teaching other people this to help all the communities.
Everyone.
Which, to be honest, like, I can't fault him for getting that tunnel vision of I'm just trying to heal.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, we live in a world that is incredibly interconnected. But back in the 1700s, it really wasn't. You didn't associate with people outside of your community very often.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, if this was the 1700s, I could move to a new community and be like, I'm a lawyer. And people would go, okay.
Here you go.
I'm not a lawyer, just for the record. for those listening at home, I am not an attorney.
You just play one on TV.
I don't even play one on TV. eventually, though, people did obviously accept it, and it caught on. By 1805, Napoleon was ordering the vaccination of his entire army.
Oh, wow.
Right? Like, it took 10 years. 10 years from, like, hey, this works, to, give it to all my troops. I do not want any of my troops getting smallpox so we can defeat Europe. So we can defeat the Europeans.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever Napoleon did, I don't remember. This is just a time machine. I'm not going to get into it.
You don't remember? Like, you were there. I don't remember.
Anyway, let's talk about some news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a lap or two.
Okay, what's going on in the world today?
Well, there are shape-shifting robots.
What?
Okay, well, no, that's what the paper promised, but when you actually read it, they haven't developed the shape-shifting robots physically. What they've done is they're developing AI to control shape-shifting robots in a simulation called Ditto Gym.
Okay, I would like to remind everyone out there that yesterday's science fiction is today's science. And science fiction has taught us that robots with AI capabilities are not always the best thing for society.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there, should we really be exploring this avenue?
Shape-shifting robots? I mean, yeah, I'm all for it. I agree with you. They're already right now the military is testing robotic dogs with rifles attached to them. AI-controlled robot dogs with rifles.
That is horrifying. That is absolutely horrifying.
I'm 100% against that. Why are we continuing to build weapons to kill each other?
Yeah.
I really, 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 really want to get over that.
Do we really need more powerful ways to kill each other? I think we're doing a pretty good job with what we got.
Yeah. We're teaching machines to kill us, to kill ourselves. It's species suicide, and we can all see that.
It really is.
That's not what this, Tsinghua University and MIT joint study we're doing. So there are soft robots.
Okay, shape-shifting robots. What does that mean?
So right now we've got soft robots that can bend, stretch, and compress themselves.
Okay.
So the idea is they can shift by bending, stretching, or compressing themselves. They can form different shapes and manipulate their own structure into different ways of movement. And what they did was they created this like kind of virtual playground that's called Ditto Gym.
Okay.
Which is a sim environment where they can test and refine the different algorithms that are going to be needed to control these robots. And inside of that Ditto Gym, they can give it various challenges to solve, like, oh, navigate through this, navigate this obstacle course, right? Or put this ball in this basket.
Okay.
The same AI principles that have been working so well, reinforcement learning, these robots are learning through trial and error. So it'll just like do a guess and check and try different strategies and then work out which one's working best.
And the ultimate purpose or goal of this is what? Why do we need robots that change their shape? Like, what are they going to do with it?
Off the top of my head, if there was like a mining collapse and you needed to get a robot in there to deliver something.
Okay.
It could make its way through, a damaged thing on your ship, on your spaceship. You got to get the robot through the damage to get to where it can repair.
Okay.
It's just, it's crazy versatile, right? If the robot was a tool, like a robotic hammer, it could be like soft on the grip and have less impact when you swing it. Now, granted, I don't think we would be swinging hammers if we got a smart robot like that. I'm just trying to spitball off the top of my head.
Right, right.
Ultimately, though, it probably where you're thinking to mimic humans.
Well, yeah. This sounds really cool, but what are we going to use it for?
We're gonna use it to make androids like Blade Runner.
Data, here we come. Data, he was data. Never mind. Data. I cannot pronounce words correctly. By the way,
I'm pretty sure both pronunciations are correct.
I thought they called him Data.
Oh, see, that's just it. They did call him.
I'm making a really obscure reference to Star Trek. Sorry.
Hey, somebody's got to bring it up every episode.
No, we never bring it up on this show.
It's first time. Well, Dr. Pulaski in season 2 called him Data. So it's kind of canon. You can get away with it. Though she was, I don't know if the actress meant to or not, but her character was condescending towards the android.
Just to be clear out there, all you robots, I am not being condescending. Please don't hold it against me or come after me. Or
to continue talking about robots, big robot, heavy day, a new research group has developed robotic insects.
Okay.
So these tiny new robotic insects setting records for speed and agility, they are 2 centimeters long. And they zip around wirelessly controlled, not tethered to anything. And they're built to kind of design to mimic natural insects. Like, you know how like a cockroach will quickly like just scuttle across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this tiny little 2 centimeter smaller than a fucking matchstick robot does. It has, they call it a running gait.
Pretty tiny.
It can run 17 and a half body lengths per second, which is
holy
is,
fuck.
That's about a foot a second for this tiny little robot. That small? Yeah, that's really fast.
That's scary.
And it can just turn on a dime. And I've got more answers for this. If you're like, why the hell are we doing this?
The hell are we doing this? We need more bugs in the world.
What you said earlier about science fiction of yesterday becomes science reality today.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Asimov, I can't remember which book. I remember reading it when in high school. One of his books, the planet is suffering and they don't have pollinators. And so the robotics company builds all these robot insects to start doing the organic jobs that the missing insects and wildlife were no longer doing. As the ecology of the planet collapsed, they started introducing the robots and they were able to save it.
So as we wipe out our bee population, all hope is not lost.
We can replace it with robot bees. Yes.
Got it.
Hopefully it would be to supplement real life bees and keep our stuff intact while we could save the bees so we wouldn't have to keep doing robots. Well, I would hope. But
that should be our goal. It should be our goal.
Right. Just like world peace should be our goal. But there's a lot of weapons industries that don't want to go away.
Yeah.
Zero prisoners in prison. Zero convicted felons should be the goal. But it'll never be the goal, right?
Yeah.
Well. No one ever getting arrested should be the goal. But it's never going to be our goal.
Yes, but we should be saving the bees. Like, we kind of depend on them.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure I want robots. Bugs out there, like, pollinating my food. I don't know. I just feel a little bit insecure about that.
Well, and other things it could do, like, you could imagine if they're like, what's the structural integrity of this bridge? Like, well, let's stick these bugs on it. And they'll scurry around in and out all the cracks, and they'll create a perfect 3D map.
As someone who crosses bridges, I can appreciate that.
They can inspect all sorts of complex machinery, just like the foldable robot. That'd be great in space. You just put the bugs on it.
Yeah.
The bugs fix it.
Yeah, no, that I can see that as an application, as a worthwhile application.
Anyway, before we start talking about snake oil, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the amazing gift shop over at halfcocktails.com/shop. Not only is it the perfect way to support the show and show your love for science, it's also a wonderful way to fill your wardrobe with science-positive messaging. I mean, hats, t-shirts, hoodies, we got it all. Got it all. I know I enjoy the Half Cocktails artwork. And you will too. That's the Dan Leeson lack of a guarantee, because I can't actually guarantee you'll like it. Taste is very subjective. And the scientist in me won't allow me to make such a claim. But gosh darn it, I want to. And that is the Dan Leeson guarantee. I should riff every one of these improv off the top of my head.
You should. Right.
Especially... The more I sip on that science, the saltier they get.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So just take a moment to support the show. Go over to halfcocktails.com/shop and pick something out for your friends. It's a great gift. They'll be like, where the hell did you get this? Boom. Conversation started.
There you go. We appreciate it. That's for sure.
All right. Let's get the professor in here and talk about some snake oil.
Yes, professor.
Oh, snake oil. On sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
All right, we have the professor back in the lounge. How are you doing today, professor?
Hey, I'm doing good. Rocking and rolling. It's Mother's Day. Or can I say what day it is?
You're absolutely. Well, you just did. So here we are. We recorded this on Mother's Day, yes. And both you and I have deceased mothers, so we're not shorting anybody with our time and attention.
Right, yeah, we can do whatever we want today.
I called up my friend Ellen, and I wished her a happy not-a-Mother's Day.
Oh, that's nice.
And yeah, and then the conversation immediately went into Roe v. Wade, because in the 70s, she did... have an abortion, and she you know, proudly would make the choice again, and she's like, and now we're going backwards. I was like, holy shit, yeah, that's right, we are going backwards. Anyway, A lot of bullshit there we don't need to get into. Let's get into the snake oil of the day. There was an article recently published in the New York Times by Gabriel Zuckman, wrote the article. He's an economist at the University of California, Berkeley. And he wrote a book called The Triumph of Injustice, How the Rich Dodge Taxes and How to Make Them Pay. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to tax reform. It's a big, big loaded thing. And on top of this article, the reason I wanted to talk about it today was the Trump Organization is getting hit by the IRS because they audited them and they're going to get hit with, it looks like, over $100 million in tax fines because dude bro claimed losses twice. You're not allowed to do that.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, his Chicago Tower lost a bunch of money, and so he wrote it off. And then he had one of his other companies buy the company that wrote it off, and then he wrote it off again on the second company, like 4 years later.
Oh, no. Well, oh, no. Oh, no, for him, he got caught.
And the IRS noticed, and they were like, excuse me, this is tax fraud. You still owe this? Well, they didn't say fraud, but they're still looking to collect and undo, which I feel like is very generous.
They're sending a bill.
So that got my mind on it. And then I came across this New York Times article and was like, no, we just need to talk about taxes in general because they are some bullshit snake oil. And they didn't start out that way. But where we're at when it comes to rich people in taxes and you and I in taxes, it's two completely different sports. It's not even the same game. It's not even like T-ball, it's professional baseball. It's like you and I are shooting pool in the bar and they're out at like a fucking rodeo. It's just completely different experience for us and them. And I wanted to walk people through how super rich people pay no taxes.
Excellent. Love it.
Because it's not always most people, they don't know. They don't know. They're not educated and informed. And that's one of the things we like to do on this show. So why I call taxes for rich people snake oil is because they don't have to pay them. And it's a little bit of a shell game.
Exactly. It's a lot of bit of a shell game.
If you're Jeff Bezos and you own Amazon, one of the biggest, most successful companies in the world, you don't own it all, but you're in charge of it. You're in control of it. And you have a shit ton of stock. Now, he only draws, I think it's like $80,000+ a year salary. And it's like, well, how can he be rich, right? Well, you know, he gets all these stock options and he owns all these assets. He then goes to a bank and gets a securities-based line of credit or loan.
Super low interest.
Super low interest. Doesn't even matter the interest as long as it's not like a payday loan. I guarantee it's not payday loan interest, by the way. But you're right. It's probably a lower interest. It's probably lower than a single digit. Mm-hmm. I don't know because we don't have access to that data. That's private between him and his bank. As far as I know, we don't. But poor Jeff Bezos doesn't make any money. He doesn't have any money because all he has is stock and assets in Amazon, right? So he goes to this bank and says, "Oh, I can't sell this because then I would be taxed. It would be income. If I sold this stock, if I sold off pieces of these companies, I would have income, and they can tax income. So would you, Mr. Bank, would you be so nice as to just loan me $1 billion? I mean, I've got $10 billion in Amazon stock right now." He's got way more than that. I'm just using easy numbers. Mm-hmm. And the bank says, sure, why not? And as long as he pays the interest in the terms of the loan, he's fine. Oh, it's been 10 years. He needs to pay back that one. Okay, well, I'll just have Amazon issue me some more shares and get a new loan, pay off the first one, and now I'm just paying the interest on this one. A loan isn't taxable.
The salary is absolutely enough to pay the interest on, you know, that $80,000 salary will pay for the interest on $1 billion worth of loans.
If the interest percentage rate is low enough, I would have to do the math on it. But their salary is used to pay the interest. They could sell small amounts of stock to pay the interest.
Anything they have, anything they want, they're not paying for the stuff that makes their lives luxury lives.
Correct.
Between these little loans, which, I mean, you could just do a lot of them, just do one loan for everything they want. The big house and their car is leased, and et cetera, with these special behind the scenes interest rate deals. Mm-hmm. And then meanwhile, like, the money that they make is completely tied up in securities, or, speaking of the shell game, like shell companies, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're just taking in these teeny tiny low taxable salaries. And then they can say, oh, look, our CEO pay is so much better in relation to our worker pay than these other evil companies.
Exactly. I'm Jeff Bezos. I'm a great guy. But the fact of the matter is, if you ask me, if you received something that you can use as collateral on a loan, that's income. If you or I received that, you and I have to report things. Like, if you win a car on a fucking game show, you have to pay taxes on that car.
Yeah.
Right? That's a thing. But if you're a fucking rich-ass CEO of Amazon and you give yourself $1 billion worth of stock, it's not taxed. But you can take a loan out on it. And that's, to me, is the biggest fraud. I used to talk about that on Two Bulls. I'd always shut people up because they'd be like, well, it's not income because it's not realized gains. I said, then how come you can get a loan on it? Tell me it's not fucking income. Yeah. I'm obviously very salty about it. It's not. Yeah. It doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. And the sad truth is, you go one step further. When they do sell it, capital gains taxes at a much lower rate.
What's in it for the bank to offer these loans to these sharks?
Oh, this isn't. They don't just walk into any bank. They walk into the bank their company's doing business with.
Okay.
Oh, you like all the money coming in from doing business with Amazon and its giant accounts? Okay, well, maybe you'll give me a nice little loan. Now, this is my tinfoil hat theory, but I don't think it's too far of a leap to say any bank holding Amazon's accounts doesn't want to lose them.
No, that makes sense to me. That seems good. It does seem like another thing that the super rich have access to that regular Joes don't, that makes it impossible to bootstrap to that level.
Yes.
Certainly without exploitation.
Yeah. Very famously, in the past few years, we watched Elon Musk gather up about, what, $13 billion in tax-free loans to buy Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, Elon Musk didn't write a check from his big fucking bank account. He took a loan to get Twitter, and he used all of his Tesla stock as collateral.
Gotcha.
I'm sure he could also take private companies like SpaceX and put them up for a bank as collateral. I think it's easier, and that's why most of these billionaires have some private companies. I think it's easier for them because they're like, well, I own everything in that company. So if it folded, I could sell off all the rocket parts and still pay back this loan.
The rich people never sell their securities then.
I mean, it does happen, but generally it's planned out slow and done through trusts. So,
'cause it seems better to just get a loan with your securities as collateral, and then get another loan from the other bank you do business with to pay off the first.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's generally how it is. I don't know about the data, like somebody like Steve Jobs. I know like he famously would lease his car.
I love it when a billionaire like is trying so hard to be just like us in some way, like driving a Ford.
Yeah. Back to the topic at hand. So what can we do about it? I mean, they're talking about global taxes, because a lot of times people bring up like, oh, let's start taxing the rich, because it's not just the progressive tax bracket here in America, which was decimated by Reagan, by the way. It was 70% at the top. Reagan got it down to the 30s. And now I think right now it's 37, because it's been bounced between 30 and 40. But it used to be 90% in the fucking 50s. Okay. So it's not like it destroyed the country to have the top tax bracket pay 90%.
No, it was a marginal bracket. You know, it's not, they're paying 90% on everything over X, not everything.
Everybody pays the same amount for the first chunk of dollars they make. And then everybody who makes more than that chunk pays the next amount. It's like stair steps. You don't ever get to 90
on that
until you already paid the lowest tax rate for that first chunk of money. And then the next chunk of money you pay slightly more taxes on. And then the next chunk you pay slightly more. So it's very fair. Sadly, it's just been destroyed. And part of it is this ongoing rhetoric of trickle down economics, which is complete horseshit. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, if trickle down economics worked, you could look at our tax rates and we should all be super rich.
Yeah.
Okay. There'd be so much money. There's fucking trickling down. You know, we'd have single parent household or single worker households again.
Yeah. Trickle down rhetoric started like making its way into the conversation right about when Friedman capitalism, classic capitalism, switched over to neoliberal capitalism, and we started to see no longer did the productivity of companies care about or rely on the productivity of people, because we used to actually really care about that. If the people weren't productive enough, they wouldn't be buying stuff, and then the companies wouldn't be making money.
Yes.
But now it literally doesn't matter anymore, because they monetize other stuff and play the shell game with their shell companies and with their loans. And I don't know, make money off of human bodies through the 14th Amendment, 13th Amendment, by having for-profit prisons.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. For-profit prisons, and prisoners are the only ones who have an exemption in that 14th Amendment to slavery, by the way.
Yeah.
you read through that amendment. Yeah, trickle down economics has been they were putting that shit forward in the 1800s. And I think, I don't want to butcher it. An argument against trickle down economics that works very, very well. It's got some great imagery. How a rich man's horse, by shitting, provides food for the sparrows. suggesting that it's such a model of economic distribution. So we might as well, if we want more sparrow food, then we should feed, if we want to save the birds, let's feed the horses. And it makes a lot of sense that way. It's like, oh, wait, that actually isn't the best way to feed birds, is it? No,
yeah.
No, it's not. So there's like a lot of fear if we start taxing rich people that they'll move to other countries. So what we're starting to see, and happily, is minimum tax rates that countries are agreeing to globally, like global minimum taxes.
Mm.
So it's like, no matter what, where you're doing business and where you're living, you're going to pay some tax. So we had 2021, more than 130 countries agreed to a minimum global tax rate of 15%. And currently, the talk now is, coordinated minimum tax on not businesses, but billionaires themselves.
Yeah.
Somebody like the guy Arnault, the French dude, Bernard Arnault, who has a car company, he's worth about $210 mm-hmm. billion. Dollars. So
Jesus.
If they did like a 2% minimum wealth tax, he would be paying $4 billion a year.
I think like wealth tax just makes sense. It's straightforward. What's your net worth, and we're going to need a half a percent of that. I mean, even if we just offered something modest and just said, and sweetener, you don't have to do any of this bullshit anymore, where you show us the left hand and move stuff around with the right hand. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just going to pay half a percent wealth tax. And if you want to pay less, I guess be less wealthy or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, if we're going to have different rules for the super rich, maybe we should have something that where we can send out an olive branch and get some actual revenue out of it. Because right now they're paying nothing or next to nothing. Yeah. Or some kind of joke tax that they make up, you know, like 69, 420 taxes.
Right. Lols. it would bring something in, right? It would bring something in. And frankly, to the people, if you're upset hearing this and you're like, this guy's crazy, you know, fuck him, trickle down works. A global minimum tax, all is doing is ensuring trickle down works, because it's saying you've got a ton up top. Well, let's skim some and put it back into the system. Literally, if you're hoarding wealth, that every dollar you hoard isn't trickling anywhere.
Yeah.
There's no trickle down. It's frozen.
If it were working, it would just be working and we would know it. You know, mm-hmm. The Trump voters would not be living in double wides. They would no longer be temporarily embarrassed millionaires. They'd be millionaires.
Right. poor people would actually have something. How poor people vote for rich people's policies is beyond me. It's been happening forever. I mean,
against their self-interest.
You want to go back to feudal times. There were definitely people arguing, look, we can't be trusted with the land. We're dumbass peasants. Of course we need the Lord to fucking coordinate everything. Come on.
They were chosen by God.
Yeah, right. You think Leroy shits in a ditch over there could do better? Come on. Nothing's better than feudalism.
It's still, I mean, besides, how are you going to change it?
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff.
I'm going to change it. Anyway, I'm going to leave links to the story about the Trump tax double dip. I'm going to leave links to the New York Times article. All right. So we're gonna move along. I'm gonna get back to the regular scheduled presentation. Thanks for coming by, Professor, and helping us with this talk on taxes today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Professor's dropping in for a little tax talk.
It's happened again. Amber, it's fact-checking time.
Here we go, what do you know? It's fact-checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact-checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the proof that all the kids call fact-checking time.
Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to Fact-Checking Time, the news show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has deemed worthy of a fact-check. We're here in the Half Cocktails Lounge with Amber today. Amber, woo! Today, as always, you're playing for Poncho Cat, co-host of the Half Cocktails News Shorts. And whether you win or lose, we'll decide whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner tonight.
I love you, Poncho.
And let me tell you,
last week,
Ron went 0-3. And Poncho, I left out a picture of Ron, and Poncho shredded right up. Because I told him, this is the guy. Ooh. This is the guy that denied your dinner. Ooh. And I went to bed, woke up next morning, it was just in pieces. So I know he cares.
All right. Well,
he knows.
I would not want that to happen to my picture. So.
Right? Okay.
Do my best.
So I'm going to present to you a series of events and stories that were in the news this week, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. They may be articles, they might be social media posts, they might be interview quotes, but only some of them were fact-checked. Okay? Are we ready to begin?
All right, let's do this. I'm ready.
All right. Either there's a starfish in the ocean whose arms look like penises.
Ooh.
Or on Easter, a priest told his parishioners that Jesus died on the cross with a fully erect penis. Yeah, which was fact-checked.
Wow, okay, I mean, I gotta love a good penis story.
Yep. You know what this show's about. You know what we do.
Wow. Oh, I so want that second one to be true, because that just... Wow. Okay, which one would be fact-checked? I would say they fact-checked the starfish.
Correct. Well done. In the episode description, you can find the link to the fact-check that has the image of the starfish. And I can assure you, it does, in fact, look like it has five dicks.
Nice.
Yes. And
that's somebody's spirit animal out there. I don't know whose, but
somebody's spirit animal. while not fact-checked, it did happen. Father Thomas McHale, a priest at Our Blessed Lady Immaculate in Black Hill, England.
Okay.
He told his parishioners that blood would have rushed to the lower half of the body as a result of the violent execution method of crucifixion. So basically he's saying if you're crucified, you because you're up there and the blood's rushing down, it's going to pool, it's going to give you a hard-on. So Christ died with the hard-on.
I'm not quite sure the science is behind that, but I don't know.
I agree with you. The science is not behind that. I've never heard that.
Yeah, that's a new one.
That's not quite your circulatory system works.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, and that's just bizarre. Why feel the need to bring that up? I mean, never mind. He was a priest.
Well, he is an American Catholic priest in England. So,
yeah.
I mean, apologies to any Catholics listening, but I don't think this guy's made good life choices.
Gosh, that's so. Can you imagine taking your child to Sunday service?
You're coming with me to church.
Maybe on Easter. Oh my gosh. Don't do it, folks. It's all a scam.
All right. Oh no, it gets better. You ready for the next one?
Oh no. Better than Beatrice?
That was just a warm-up.
Oh boy.
Either Khloe Kardashian had 3 DNA tests done on her son because she's convinced it's her brother's child. Or a Kentucky senator proposed changing the legal definition of incest to make fucking your first cousin no longer incestual, which was fact checked.
Wow. Feel like you have, I'm a little worried that you specially curated these questions for me.
No, I literally found I found them and was like, oh, this is great. This is the best episode ever.
Amber will never get these.
Penises and incest in one episode?
I mean,
doing something right.
God, they're both so. Which one would be fact checked? I'm going to say they fact checked the law. The second one, the legal.
Correct, Pancho. That's 2 for 3. You're getting wet food for dinner.
All right, Pancho, you are welcome.
It's going to hold your picture in high esteem.
That is fucking creepy. Kentucky, what the fuck?
Okay, so it was, what it was a draft of the law was released, and the guy claimed it was a clerical error, and he did update it. They were trying to broaden the definition of incest, not narrow it. And a draft got leaked that was apparently written incorrectly.
Yeah, those are two very different things.
Here's my legalized heroin bill. Like, oh, he's for legalizing heroin. I mean,
he was just hoping it would slide under the radar is what it really was.
Right? I meant let's make heroin even more illegal. That's what I really meant.
Yeah. That was.
And Khloe Kardashian, this story is true.
Seriously.
Her son, she feels like her son looks so much like her brother, she got 3 DNA tests. But let me qualify that by saying the child was conceived with in vitro fertilization and was carried to term in a surrogate.
Okay. I was a little worried because I'm thinking, was she not there? Like, I know I was there when my children were conceived, and I know who their father is.
I was fucking my husband and my brother. I don't know who's the dad.
I don't know which one it was. Yeah, that one.
So, at worst, she's accusing her doctor of significant malpractice.
Yeah, but why? Like, does she not have enough to worry about that she needs more? Like, I don't know. I don't know why that's a big deal. It's your kid. You love him or you don't love him. Like, it doesn't matter.
I was not surprised that your son Steven looked just like one of Jim's brothers. Which one was it? Patrick?
Chris.
Chris. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he looked a lot like Chris.
So much like Chris.
You know what? Maybe it's because it was his uncle and they have the same DNA.
Genetics, maybe?
What? It's crazy. Anyway. All right. Let's wrap it up. We'll give you this last bonus question so you can try Tyron with going 3 for 3.
Well, no, I went 3 for 3. He went 0 for 3. Let's be clear.
Oh.
I went 3 for 3 2 weeks ago. He went 0 for 3.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. You're correct. Okay.
I know.
Well,
let's see
if you can tie. Let's see if we can tie your shutout. All right.
Now that I've said all that,
all right.
I probably will.
So, either a Missouri ice cream parlor cannot sell their naturally flavored cicada ice cream to celebrate the cicada hatching this year.
Yeah. What?
Health department said no. Either that was fact checked, or the FDA has approved insect protein additive made by Tyson Foods.
Okay, I'm so believing that both are true stories, but which one would have been fact checked?
Which was fact
checked? I'm going to see they fact checked the Tyson Foods because that's the one that would impact more people.
You are correct.
I think I'm on to you. I have figured out your method.
Oh, well, don't tell.
Cicada ice cream, seriously, naturally flavored? Like, who hears these bugs buzzing in the trees and go, you know what would be really good? Let's crush them up and make ice cream.
Okay, well, first of all, they did do that in 2011, the last time the cicadas brood hatched. Ice cream shop in Columbia, Missouri called Sparky's Homemade Ice Cream sold it, and it was a huge hit, and they sold out.
Wow.
So people, there's a demand. So they were going to do it again, but the local health department said,
Yeah, no. Wow. What does the cicada taste like? Like, now I'm curious, but not curious enough to eat one.
I don't know, but they are edible. People have various recipes that, like, a lot of chocolate dipped.
Really?
And the Food and Drug Administration in 2021 came out and said, if you're allergic to seafood, don't eat cicadas.
Okay.
They are related to shrimp and lobsters.
To shrimp and lobster? That is unreal. Like,
yeah.
Wow. I learned something.
Yeah. They are. Mm-hmm. That's
crazy.
That's right.
And then Tyson Foods, huh?
No, that was fact checked and it was found to be false.
Oh,
that's
good.
Just a social media claim.
Whew.
Anyway, let's wrap things up with this.
Yeah.
This is something that feels
let's
good.
Let's get a good story.
A goal for a sip. Maybe even a hit. And join us for half.
Okay, there is a program going on in Michigan that I hope spreads across the entire nation. This is really something to help reduce anxiety and help promote learning. Several elementary schools in Michigan have enrolled service dogs as full-time happiness ambassadors.
I love that.
And it is working like gangbusters.
Oh my gosh. That's
awesome. They're having a huge difference in the academics of these kids. So
let me tell you, okay, so as a high school teacher, we stress our children out way too much. Way too much. There's too much pressure on them to perform and to achieve all of these goals that other people are setting for them that aren't always realistic. And we're burning them out. Like, my high schoolers are so burned out at this point. I would love to have therapy dogs be brought in, like, during testing week. That would be awesome. What a great idea.
Yeah. And there have been, I think just in 2021, we had in the Frontiers of Veterinary Science, a study was published, Therapy Dogs in Educational Settings, Guidelines and Recommendations. We know it's beneficial. Like we've got the research.
Well, anybody who's pet a dog for more than 5 minutes knows how wonderful it is.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the ladies who has a daughter in the school, who's been diagnosed with something called Fragile X syndrome, along with autism and ADD. She gets angry and will start to scream and cry uncontrollably. But once the dog showed up, if she has a fit, they bring the dog in and it calms her down like almost instantly. Yeah. The dog's able to calm this girl down and other kids down too.
Absolutely. That's their like, oh, I love that. What a great feel good story.
Right? Right. One of the fifth graders even interviewed for the story was like, my math was super hard, but then Mika came in and when I take a break with her for a few minutes, the math gets easier.
Go figure.
I'm like, yeah, because you fucking had a rest and your brain recuperated.
Yep. Called mindfulness. Not to be too woke, but mindfulness. Like, we need it. We need to be taking breaks. We need to not be pushing so hard. I love that. I'm going to put that in my pocket for when I open my own school.
There you go. There you go.
I love that.
All right. Good stuff. Yeah, I came across this story and was like, okay, no, this is really up my alley. This is some feel-goodery.
I love it. That was wonderful.
Okay. All right. Sadly, though, all good things, even feel-goods, they got to come to an end. Everything's transitory in this thing we called life. Right. Before we close the lounge, I do want to thank Soylent Corporation. Taste the rainbow. Is their new motto? Or is that Skittles? I think it's both. I think it's Soylent. Soylent had it first.
Green. Go for the green one.
Sadly, we don't have any time left for the surprising color interior designers don't want you to know about. It might be Soylent Green. I don't know. sorry, we're out of time. That's on me.
It may be.
I do want to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and the Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. And before we go, Amber, any parting thoughts or goodbyes?
Just don't love on your cousins. Like, usually I end love everybody, but let's not get too far, folks.
You're gonna put that out there in America? Don't tell me what to do.
Oh, fuck. Wait. Let's rewind that.
Have a wonderful day, everyone. If you had a good time with us, you know what to do. Tell someone that needs to know. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com.
Yes.
We are on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, you can find us over on Patreon, or you can come buy something at the halfcocktails.com/shop. That's always, yeah. That's 24/7.
Get yourself there. A shirt.
As for now, thanks for stopping by. Go out and be well.
Love you. Have a great week.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. We're just leaving you half-cocked. 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 We had a good time talking today. But even best times, eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, we're just leaving half-cocked.